I remember being taught, don't care too much, because too much caring burns you out. Oh. And I believed that dogma. I didn't even think to question it.
Yeah.
For 25 years, until I was in the throes of burnout myself.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life.
Lisa! Wake up! It's me, your anxiety. Lisa, how can you sleep? The world is in dire straits. People need you.
People always need me. Must sleep.
Yeah, well, what if you're the only one who can help, Lisa? But instead of helping, you're here in bed. You ever think about that? Huh?
That makes it worse.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's getting worse. The condition of the dust jackets at the local library, because someone stopped volunteering. It was you.
Please, I'm tired.
You know who else is tired? That new friend of yours who just had a baby. Why haven't you called her, brought a meal, mowed the lawn, ended homelessness? Come on, Lisa, wake up!
Oh, stop. Is it 2 a.m.?
Oh, yes it is. But you're right. Go back to sleep. See you in 2 hours.
Thanks. Oh, anxiety. One of the many factors that can make social impact overwhelming, but definitely not the only one. But more on that in a moment. Before we get too ahead of ourselves, I just want to give a shout out to Chris, who left a comment on our YouTube video with the Council of Moms when we were talking about how to make friends as an adult. Chris, okay, you mentioned mixing up your routine when walking your dog so that you can meet more of your neighbors and fellow dog lovers. And I really love that idea. You make new friends, so does your dog, and you're making personal connections in your local community. Win, win, win. Okay, back to social impact. This is episode 5 of our Doing Good Better series. And you may remember how last episode we talked about how to choose between charitable organizations, who to give our money and time to, where it will do the most good. That episode will reassure your inner skeptic. This episode is for your inner altruist who's feeling a little overwhelmed. We're talking about burnout. Now, burnout isn't specific to social impact. As you may remember, we did a whole episode about burnout in our series on caregiving, how to prevent it and cope with it. And there are some aspects of burnout that remain the same no matter what you're talking about. Burnout is emotional and physical exhaustion, which saps your motivation to carry on, even in things you care about. And it takes a toll on your mental and physical health. For caregivers, most of whom do not have the option to quit what they're doing, this can be life-threatening. For social impact workers, burning out may not carry the risk of death, but it does threaten your ability to stay involved. It forces people out of the important work they're doing. Back in episode 2, Aaron Miller mentioned that the most valuable resource in social impact is people, even more than donations. We don't need people to be perfect. We just need more people. And so burnout poses a real threat, both to individuals and to the good of society. And that's why I wanted to talk to a few people who are immersed in this world 9 to 5 as full-time social impact makers. Because even though most people will not have a full-time job making social change, most of us are doing it on the side, the people who do spend all of their time serving their communities are intimately familiar with how this burnout works and how to combat it. Giving back can be emotionally draining, even part-time, and we want to be in it for the long haul. How do you make a meaningful contribution to social impact without jeopardizing life balance, mental well-being, or relationships? Let me introduce you to Dr. Stephen Treziak.
My name's Steve Treziak, and I am a physician scientist, which is code for research nerd. So I'm a practicing physician, but I also do research. And I am the chair of the Department of Medicine at Cooper University Healthcare and Cooper Medical School of Rowan University. And I'm an intensivist, which is a term for specialist in intensive care medicine. So if you become my patient, it's because you need life-sustaining therapies in the ICU.
As I'm sure you can imagine, for someone whose title is literally intensivist. Steve knows a thing or two about burnout.
Everybody's heard of burnout, and burnout has been studied the most in healthcare workers. But I want to be crystal clear about one thing. You don't have to be a healthcare worker to feel burned out. Mm-hmm. That's just the population in which most of the research has been done. It's not a healthcare thing. There's nothing special about putting scrubs on in the morning and going to work in a hospital that makes you prone to burnout. And burnout is everywhere, especially after a years-long pandemic. And the cornerstones of burnout are emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, so an inability to make personal connections. And lastly, a feeling like you're just not making a difference. And I was batting 3 for 3 there, working in the ICU. And after more than 20 years at that time of meeting people and their families on the worst day of their life, I became keenly aware that I had every symptom of burnout myself. And I want to be transparent with that. It is, I'll just say it can be a dark place.
And in that dark place, Steve remembered learning about this in medical school and how to combat it. But he soon realized that there was a glaring problem with conventional wisdom about burnout at the time.
I went to med school in the 90s, and I remember being taught, don't care too much, because too much caring burns you out. And I believed that dogma. I didn't even think to question it for 25 years until I was in the throes of burnout myself. And so what was I supposed to do? Well, I wasn't believing the conventional do more yoga and take nature walks by yourself and, you know, put on your meditation app on your phone and your headphones and block out the world. Those things are all fine. But I wasn't buying it because to me, that just means, you know, the message, just take more vacations, get away more. That just would mean that if I could get away from patients as much as possible, then everything would be fine. And how is that sustainable?
Right.
So I thought that something fundamentally had to change at the point of care and not an escape.
Now, to be clear, I don't think Dr. Treziak is saying that there's anything wrong with taking breaks or meditating. Those things are important too. But as he noticed, these things address the symptoms of burnout, not its cause. He and his colleague, Dr. Maz, did some digging and discovered what tackles burnout at its root, and that's compassion.
That was when we started to do our work with what we call compassionomics. It's just a moniker for looking at compassion through a scientific lens. And that's when we became aware of all the evidence that compassion is a powerful, beneficial therapy for the giver too, not just the receiver. And imagine my surprise when I looked at the scientific evidence. And back when I was in med school in the early 90s, it was just conjecture and stories and opinions. But now, 20 plus years later, there was ample scientific evidence that shows that compassion and burnout are associated, but it's inverse. It's inverse. High compassion, low burnout, low compassion, high burnout. If what I was taught in medical school was true, it would be high compassion, high burnout, low compassion, low burnout.
So what Dr. Treziak is saying here is that the more compassionate we are to others, the less burnout we will feel. Does that surprise you? It surprised me. And I think most of us would have just assumed that the more we give emotionally to others, the more depleted we'd feel. But in reality, the opposite is true.
The key to resilience is relationships. And so if you care deeply about other people, in my case, patients and families, but it wasn't just patients and families. It was the nurses that I'd worked with for, at that time, more than 15 years. It was my trainees, my colleagues, even at home. And when, rather than detaching and pulling back on all those self-care approaches that are just about getting away and escaping, I did the opposite. And I leaned into those relationships and cared more, not less. And that is when the fog of burnout began to lift for me. And it was because in leaning in and investing more in those, it deepened those relationships. And it was the relationships. That's the mechanism. It's the relationships that boost resilience and can be an antidote, if you will, to burnout.
This is fascinating to me. Leaning into relationships is what cures social impact burnout. Giving more of yourself, not less, is what makes you feel like you have more to give. It's counterintuitive, but this is what we heard over and over again from the people we interviewed. It's real relationships that get people through, relationships that make serving other people worthwhile, whether those relationships are with the people they're serving or the team they're serving with or even with God. And building real relationships means being open, not closed off. It requires compassion. Steve found that this theory of compassion had universal applications.
And then Dr. Maz and I got to thinking, there's no way that this is just true for healthcare workers, for people who put on scrubs and go to work in a hospital. There has to be like a common thread, a universal. And that's when we found all the evidence around serving others. You know, the people who just like radiate joy, they happen to also be the biggest givers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those people didn't need our books. But for people like me who need all the research nerd material, it's very helpful.
I think we all know someone like this, the type of person who radiates joy and is naturally gifted at compassion. For me, it's my friend Wendy. I've known her my whole life, and she's the one that shows up with the note or the treat or sends a package or shows up at my door when I just had a baby and knows exactly what to do. And when she shows up, it feels like you're doing her the favor. She just helps in a natural way. And it's her kids she helps and her neighbors and her coworkers and her friends. It's not just me. It's just who she is. But not everyone is a natural Wendy. I mean, I think we'd like to be. So how do you even begin to become one?
The best piece of advice I could give for anyone who's struggling with serving others is, and I don't mean this to sound trite at all, but start small. I mean, you don't need to quit your job and sell all your worldly possessions and move to a third world country and start hauling water from a distant well. That is not required. Just looking for micro opportunities in our daily orbit, even starting with your colleagues maybe in your workplace or the people who live under your own roof. So research from the University of Toronto found that regular people in everyday life have 9 empathy opportunities every day. And when you're aware of it, or at least when I'm aware of it, it opens my eyes and helps me to look for those little opportunities around me every day.
9 empathy opportunities each day. And don't you love that Dr. Treziak used the word opportunities instead of obligations? It just carries so much less pressure and effort. In fact, these opportunities almost come to us if we're willing to open ourselves to them. According to Steve, we just need to look for these opportunities in our daily orbits, whether that be at work or at school, at church, or even in the line at the grocery store.
What research also points to is something called a personal paradigm shift, where you don't need to change your surroundings. You just need to change your experience of your surroundings and look for those 9 empathy opportunities every day.
So let's say you want to take advantage of these 9 daily empathy opportunities, but you feel inadequate and awkward. Listen, I know a thing or two about being awkward. I kind of made a career on being awkward. Well, the good news is that compassion can become our superpower if we're willing to practice.
Change is possible. Dr. Dweck, for example, has also done research on compassion and has found that among people who believe that you can, in fact, get better, those are the people who will keep working at it, especially when compassion is hard. The people who have a fixed mindset and believe it's just not who I am, those people will never put in the work, so they'll never get any better. Hmm. The compassion mindset is all about time. It doesn't take much time at all. In fact, what the research points to is that a meaningful compassion connection only takes 40 seconds.
40 seconds of practice. That's all it takes to show compassion and build relationships, both of which means you're more likely not to burn out in doing good. I wish 40 seconds is all it took to be better at Duolingo, but that little owl is just relentless. He says 40 seconds is enough, but, you know, it's just not. And I've been going at this for about 3 years now, and es no bueno, you know what I mean? But I digress. I love this idea because it's something I can do easily at any time of day. My kid comes home from school and I can give them 40 seconds of undivided attention. I'm at church and there's a new family who's moved in, so I can give them 40 seconds of welcoming them and introducing myself. I'm checking in at the auto repair shop to get my tires checked, and I can ask the person at the counter, "How has your day been?" and actually pay attention to the answer. Tiny 40-second moments of compassion. This is something all of us can do, introverts and extroverts alike. Now, you probably remember the Food and Care Coalition from the third episode of this series. They're a nonprofit organization providing essential services to people experiencing homelessness in Provo, Utah. And prioritizing these brief, compassionate interactions is where the staff at the Food and Care Coalition excel. This is Josh Robinson, the operations manager at Food and Care, who told me how he's gotten to know individuals at Food and Care through small moments of connection.
I've built a lot of rapport with the clients over the years where, oh, hey, Joe, hey, John, hey, Jane. I get to know people and I get to know their stories and I get to hear how they're doing. And I think that goes a long way. Come in the door and it's like, oh, John, how are you today? Oh, today's a rough day. And sometimes they just want someone to listen to them. And depending on my schedule, I try to lend them an ear to where they can tell me how they're doing. Other times it's like, oh, we're good. Thanks. Good to see you. And I pass by.
Josh takes the time to give the people he serves his personal time and attention, even if it's only a 40-second interaction. And his commitment to compassion comes from a deep-seated belief in the worth of individuals.
I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And in the Doctrine and Covenants, there's a scripture, the worth of soul is great in the sight of God. And to me, that is 100% true. Everybody has worth. And that worth is potential. Everybody has an eternal potential. So with that lens, how am I going to treat them? Definitely the negative part of society where they might look on homeless individuals negatively and say, oh, they're homeless. They're the stigma or the stereotypes that can come with it and say they're not as important because they're homeless. And to say, no, that's not true. They have worth and they have potential, and we're here to offer them a chance to improve and to change their lives.
I asked Josh, what do you do when you can't meet the needs you see? How do you know when you can go home for the day when the needs are never ending?
Yeah, that's definitely something I have to tell myself. When I'm here, I'm giving it the best I can, and sometimes that's all I can do and be okay with that. And to say, you know what, I did my best. I tried to be respectful. If I made a mistake somewhere along the line, I learned my lesson and I move forward. There's definitely days when it's harder. In winter time, for sure, people come in and you see that they're lacking in winter apparel and it's freezing cold outside or they're sick. And it can definitely take a toll mentally being involved in that. But what can I do to help during the time I'm here?
Yeah.
So, hey, you don't have clothes. Let's get you connected with the clothes that we have here to try to help the situation. Team aspect is a big thing. If I was just trying to do this alone, that would make it far more difficult. And again, that's playing into the staff teamwork, but also the community teamwork where volunteers and the community is getting involved.
The relationships Josh has established with the community he works with are essential to prevent burning out, especially in an area of social impact like this one, where the needs often outpace the resources available. Josh told me a story of one of these moments when the only solution they could provide was an incomplete one and where he had to rely on his team.
I think it was back in November or the beginning of December this last year. And I was actually the end of the day. It was 6 p.m. So 30 minutes after we had closed, and I was leaving just later than I usually do. I was heading out and there was a lady under our pine tree just bawling. And that shook me really hard that day, just seeing her in the state she was in. She was just verbalizing that she was scared, that she was alone. She didn't know what she could do. She wasn't feeling well. My heart just went out to her. It's like, I need to leave. I'm done for the day. But before I leave, this is what I can offer. So I called my coworker who's upstairs, who was on the night shift, and we worked together as a team really quick. Hey, she needs some extra clothes. She had an accident. So we got her some clothes. We gave her some privacy where she could change into the new clothes. We brought her out some blankets. We're like, hey, this is what we can offer for you tonight. We're very sorry about your situation. We care about you. Come back for breakfast tomorrow. We're going to be here. It was still hard to say, hey, I have to leave now. But in that situation, I felt like we did the best we could. And I feel like she improved. She was still somewhat upset, scared to face the evening. But we had given her direction and a means to keep moving forward.
This story tugs at my heart. In this case, there wasn't a perfect happy ending. Josh said it was hard to verbalize those limits, and I can imagine that. It would be painful. And even if you're doing absolutely everything you can to help those in need, the solutions and social impact are rarely simple, easy, quick, or permanent. How easy would it be just to give in to black and white thinking? Like, if I can't fix this problem today, if I can't know that I helped everyone today, I'm out. It sounds emotionally draining. That kind of constant strain to fill a never-ending gap sounds like a highway to burnout. But Josh knew his limits. He stayed late. He called on his team. He stayed with the person and provided as much comfort as he could. And then he went home, preserving his ability to come back the next day and do it all over again. He keeps his focus on the love he feels for the people and the camaraderie he feels with his team. Now I'd like to introduce you to Teresa Helm, who works as the Survivor Services Coordinator at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation.
My name is Teresa J. Helm. I am a mom, first and foremost, I would say. I currently work with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, otherwise known as NCOSE. We combat sexual exploitation. We fight for human dignity. We have a law center. We have our corporate advocacy. We work with survivors daily. And we have our research institute as well.
Teresa's job is all about combating sexual exploitation and fighting for human rights. Obviously, her job isn't an easy one, and that's understating it. But her relationships with the other members of her team relieve some of the stress that comes with the work.
I really do work with some of the most amazing people. Their hearts are true. You can just tell pure-hearted, mission-focused, genuine people. I don't know that anybody would really be doing this type of work if there's not a real genuine heart and commitment to helping others. So yeah. That in itself is pretty encouraging. And I know that not everyone is blessed to have that work environment and colleagues. We know this is hard work, but are we actually allowing ourselves to be supported by others in the work? Don't forget that you have people around you that you can lean on.
Teresa's relationship with her coworkers helps her in her effort to help others. But Teresa also spoke about a relationship that might be the most important of all in combating burnout, her relationship with God. And she maintains that relationship through frequent prayer.
Well, prayer for me, it grounds me. It makes me feel held. It makes me feel protected. It gives me strength. It provides clarity. It allows me to release emotions. It does everything for me. I'm going to pray about the actions I'm doing. I'm going to pray for my team. I'm going to pray for the survivors. I'm going to pray for everything. Their power of prayer is huge.
Prayer also helps Teresa know how to set healthy boundaries at work.
I have an understanding that when you're working with survivors, that sometimes their crisis pops up. And I'm not going to turn my back. I'm committed to it. Does it get a little exhausting? Sure. Mm-hmm. So of course I'm going to pray. And then you know what? It doesn't feel exhausting anymore. Hmm. It just doesn't. That prayer lifts me. The amount of gratitude that I'm able to cultivate from that prayer is the way of life for me. I'm just so glad that I'm capable of being in that kind of headspace.
Teresa discovered that leaning into her relationship with God through prayer is what allowed her to serve in complicated and triggering situations without compromising her own well-being. Again, it comes back to relationships and leaning into those so that we can find hope and a way forward. Today, we've heard from three people who are doing something extraordinary. They are in the thick of trying to impact some of society's hardest problems, critical health issues, homelessness, and sexual exploitation. What may be even more extraordinary is that they have every reason to be burned out, but they continue to show up day after day. And why? Because they have discovered the antidote to burnout. The key is to build relationships with the people we serve, the people we serve with, and with God. Most of all, they have compassion. The more compassion we put into our relationships, the more we can do for them. And it may seem like a paradox, but Dr. Treziak's research on compassionomics tells us that we can actually do more when we give more. In science. And if you struggle with finding compassion or the resilience to keep showing up for tough issues, well, I have good news. Compassion can be learned through practice. 40 seconds is all it takes. As Dr. Treziak explained to us, meaningful, compassionate connection takes less than a minute. And the rewards, well, they're significant. So here is my challenge for you. Don't shy away from doing good in the world. I know it's easy to feel overwhelmed, and anxiety doesn't help, which is kind of on par for that, because honestly, when does it ever help? But the good news is that when you help others, it actually helps you. We're going to be talking about the personal benefits of service next episode. But for right now, there are lots of problems out there that could use your help, but start in your own orbit. Look for opportunities to lift and love and listen as you go through your day, even if it's just for 40 seconds at a time. And as you lean into these relationships, you may just find that serving feels less like a burden and more like a blessing.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Avery Stoney with help from Becca Hurley, Blake Morse, Erica Price, Kenny Mears, and Michael Combs, with music and post-production by Kip Merrill. For more information on Stephen Treziak, Josh Robinson, and Teresa Helm, and their work, please go to the links in our show notes. If you haven't subscribed to The Lisa Show on YouTube, you can find even more content on our channel, including The Council of Moms, filmed live in our studio. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in the awe-inspiring world of nature? Listen to Constant Wonder, another great show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. Join host Marcus Smith in riveting conversations with individuals whose lives have been touched by the Earth's beauty and mysteries. Uncover captivating stories that shed light on our planet's wonders, from history to science and beyond. If you crave enriching experiences and deeper connections with the world around you, tune into Constant Wonder. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.